I Am Balance brings together psychiatry colleagues whose diverse cultural and professional backgrounds span the United States and the Caribbean. This collaborative effort seeks to provide a safe space where issues, information, and perspectives related to child and adolescent mental health can be shared with families and their communities. We're happy to have you join the conversation with Dr. Richards and Dr. German as we reach across the borders to delve into the wonderful world of child and adolescent psychiatry.
Hello, I'm Dr. Richards.
And I'm Dr. German.
Welcome to the first episode of our series entitled, Why Can't I Pay Attention? I am so excited for this conversation as we kick off with a topic which I am sure is a primary complaint for many parents, children, and teenagers that walk through our professional doors. And that's the issue of why can't I pay attention? But first, I want to welcome our guest, our colleague and friend, Dr. Lynnae Rivers, licensed school psychologist, who will join the discussion today and provide some insights from the psychological perspective. Hello, Dr. Rivers.
Hello, hello. How are you?
Good, 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 good. I'm so happy you're here today because this topic of why can't I pay attention is something I know we all experience. You know, I think we've all had the experience of parents or teachers, or even most importantly, children walking in with this complaint. And we know how stressful it can be, especially in the school environment when the child's academics is starting to become affected.
Right.
To kick off the conversation, I just kind of want to throw it out there so we can all talk about it. Dr. German, when this comes in your door, like when a family walks in and the chief complaint is, this child is not paying attention, this child cannot pay attention, where do you go?
Well, I usually just try to get a comprehensive history of everything that has been happening so that hopefully that allows me to hone in on what might be causing this problem for this individual.
Yeah. And I think that I, like you, kind of start with that comprehensive history. And then for me, it may, just like you, I'm sure, spiral into getting collateral information, maybe getting some screeners. I may knock on Dr. Rivers' door to kind of help with the screeners. Dr. Rivers, is there anything you want to say about that?
Really piggybacking on the same, just what you're saying as well. For me, usually teachers send a referral, this child can't pay attention. And my first question is, I need more information. Like, can't they pay attention? What's going on? So it's kind of like, what, when, and where? Is it just at school, not at home? So I think for all of us, it's a matter of just getting more information first.
Yes. And I know a lot of times parents, understandably, they are super anxious for answers and solutions. And we always kind of sometimes have to rein back because we understand the importance of that comprehensive approach. Because we know that if we forfeit a proper evaluation, this could lead to a misdiagnosis or even more concerning mistreatment. Both Dr. German and Dr. Rivers can attest to the fact that while attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, or ADHD, is perhaps one of the most common diagnoses on everybody's mind, it is not the only important diagnosis that we know can affect a child's ability to pay attention. Dr. German, what are your thoughts or comments on that?
Well, yes, as you said, ADHD being a very common one, but then also what needs to be ruled out are other things that can affect attention as well, like anxiety. Just some kids, their normal development, depending on what stage they are in their development, that can affect how well they're able to pay attention. And then you also may have anxiety if the kid has just baseline anxiety or trauma-related concerns. And then another biggie tends to be sleep deprivation. So, like I said, there are a multitude of different things that need to be considered before we can kind of figure out what's going on.
Yeah, totally agree. Because while the thought is always, if a child or a teenager walks in with that complaint, there's a temptation to slap that ADHD diagnosis. But like you rightly said, you know, if a child is anxious and their head is filled with worries, it's going to be hard for them to pay attention. Or if they're sad and their mind is filled with sad thoughts, it's going to be hard for them to pay attention. Dr. Rivers, what are some of the other diagnoses that kind of pops in your head when you're faced with this issue?
Sure. A lot of it is anxiety. I get a lot of, or even more so in recently, is cognitive functioning. Some kids are in an environment and academically they just can't keep up. So what am I going to do? I'm going to disturb my friends sitting next to me because I'm unable to read or read as well as everyone else in the class. Or they may be bored because their cognitive functioning is way above where they are. So maybe they, you know, need to be challenged a little bit more. And then what's the environment? Are they sitting next to a group of their peers and just having a great time? What are some other things that could be impacting them in the classroom?
Yeah. And I think you both kind of hit on some really important stuff, because I think for us now as clinicians, when this complaint walks through the door, we're back to that importance of a comprehensive evaluation and really understanding what's actually sitting in front of us by way of the complaint. So we're looking at the history, we're getting collaterals, we're doing screeners, we may be doing SNAPs or BASC screen reports or CBCL, and then we're putting all of that stuff together to help us understand what is behind the complaint of why can't I pay attention. Dr. German, you know, I know that you and I did a chunk of our training together, and we always talk about this whole biopsychosocial model of care and using that in terms of our approach to our assessments. Can you tell our listeners a little bit more about that and why it's so important?
Sure. So the biopsychosocial model, as you referenced, is so important because it gets broken down into three pertinent areas: the biological, the psychological, and the social. And if you're able to keep that in mind when looking at the past, the present, and even the future, it allows you hopefully to take everything into consideration that may be adversely affecting a person's difficulty in this particular case with paying attention. So it could be a genetic component to why this individual is having some of this difficulty. It can be the psychological that taps into, as we were already alluding to, this when we're talking about like trauma-related concerns, anxiety, depression. And then that social piece is so important because, as we were also saying, we need to look at the environment and keep in mind what aspects of the individual's environment, whether in the moment it's affecting the child or even something that's been going on at home or in the community, is that child focusing on that instead of being able to focus on what he needs to when he's at school trying to get certain things done? So that's why the biopsychosocial is a great model to try to keep us thinking about all of those different areas as we try to figure out what's happening with the individual.
Absolutely. And I think that when we look at our treatment, we kind of also keep ourselves mindful and aligned with that biopsychosocial approach as well. Because when we look at treating kids, especially kids that may struggle with paying attention, yes, it's the biology, because like, you know, Dr. German just mentioned, there is that genetic component that may or may not be present. But it's also, how is it affecting a child's peer relationships, their social life, their self-esteem, and all of those things we have to consider when we look at treating whatever the underlying cause is, whether it be ADHD, whether it be anxiety, whether it be a child with a very high IQ. We have to kind of look at that biology, the psychology, and the social piece in terms of addressing the issue. This has really been a great discussion. Maybe we can leave our listeners with a tip or two on this topic. Dr. Rivers, if there are any teachers out there listening, what are one or two tips you think you can leave with them that might help them dealing with a child or a teenager that's struggling to pay attention?
Good question. I always ask teachers, what have you tried? Like, what works? Does anything work? So trying to get them to try some options, whether it be for younger kids, can you chart the behavior, some type of behavioral charting where you can do positive reinforcement? And does the negative behavior decrease, if you're using some positive reinforcement? Is it only happening in a certain class? Is it only math class? Could you try to change where the child is seated, maybe move them a little bit closer to you? Is it just happening? Usually it's not just happening at home. I mean, at school and not at home, but speak with the parent and see what is the behavior like at home. And so at collecting information is going to be helpful even when you send the child, refer the child off, then you're at least able to say, this is what I've tried that works, and this is what I've tried and nothing works. So collecting information, observing the behavior, when is it happening, how often is it happening, and try some positive reinforcement.
That's excellent information, because like I mentioned earlier, it usually comes through the door with a sense of urgency. Mm. And it's important, I think, for us to kind of reassure parents and have them go through the process with us. For parents, what I would say, maybe a tip I can give to parents is that I know that it can feel overwhelming, but I think that a good place to start is with your pediatrician. We have some excellent pediatricians in the community that can actually guide you on what the next steps might be. They may initiate the screening process and then refer you either to a pediatric psychiatrist or to a pediatric psychologist. If there is somebody in the school system, a counselor or a teacher that you're especially connected with, that person may be able to guide you through the steps of finding out exactly what is going on and exactly what might be needed. So my tip is just take a pause and realize that you're not alone, and realize that the goal of the clinician is to kind of do a comprehensive assessment to make sure that we're very clear in terms of what's happening and what's needed. Dr. German, for our colleagues, I know, what are maybe some tips that you can leave them with?
Well, I guess it ties into a little bit of what you're also speaking to in regards to that aspect with the parents, is also for our colleagues to understand that this is a process and not something that we have to immediately figure out, because there may be so many different things occurring, sometimes a comorbid presence of things occurring. So this process sometimes takes time for us to be able to arrive at an appropriate conclusion. So it's always important to try to keep a broad differential and make sure each of those things are addressed, and then see what we're left with before we really can understand what might be happening with the individual.
Excellent, excellent. I mean, I think this was a short conversation, but I think that there was a lot of meat on it. And we're looking forward to episode 2, where Dr. German and I will talk a lot more about ADHD as our first and perhaps most common differential for a child that cannot pay attention. So I'm super excited, super excited. Dr. Rivers, thanks so much for stopping by, and we will definitely have you join us again as we discuss an array of important topics in pediatric psychiatry with our special U.S. Caribbean twist over the coming months. Yep. Until next time, yes, until next time, I'm Dr. Richards.
And I'm Dr. German.
Thanks for joining us.